like an issue, you know. Like, I don't know.
Good place to start. I hate myself.
It's the existential threat. I don't know.
It's the opposite of Stuart Smalley, right?
You're willing to experiencing all to experience all the bullshit because you're fine with all of it. That's how goddamn accepting you are.
Maybe not hate. How about disgusted?
Not bad. Yeah, not enough to stop eating.
Nope.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah, not even a little. I might be really angry, but I didn't skip a meal.
Although I think if I was going to end it, I don't think I'd starve myself. I might eat myself to death, though.
Yeah, well, go either way. Sure.
One last hurrah.
Mm-hmm.
That would be hard. You'd have to eat a lot of food.
Yeah, just, yeah. Takes a while, even at 800 pounds, to have your, you know, final heart attack.
So that Ken guy, he's from over there.
Was the from over there.
Was, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, he resigned from over there.
I guess he's not there today then, huh?
Probably not.
Unless
he had a change of heart and went back.
Well, he just said like he wasn't feeling it like at the time. Maybe I didn't hear the whole story, but it sounded like he wasn't like making the decision like, I'm done with that. It was just sort of like, oh, I don't really want that right now. But maybe I heard that wrong. I don't know.
Well, I think he was emphasizing the wise approach that he took to exit with love.
Let's all head over there and be like, hey, Ken, what the fuck you want? You're one of us now.
Traitor, go back to your country.
Yeah.
Some snacks?
I think I got snacks.
Okay, we'll stay for 10 minutes.
Yeah. I'm not happy about this, but I'm going to get some of your snacks.
Hand me that popcorn.
Just like life in general.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm really mad about this, but
you're not really my best friends. But
cheese pizza.
But if there's snacks, I can stay a while.
I mean, I feel like I always look through the lens of like drug addiction, but like it just seems like life itself.
That's a good one.
Is just life is just one big addiction, like.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I didn't ask for this shit, but you're like, God damn, like I'm gonna fight for it every effing day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're a metabolic engine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember signing any papers.
And even if you did, like, people say, like, oh, you made, like, a soul contract beforehand. Like, that's, like, that version of me, if you will, is not me. Like, that's not the same fucking thing.
I know.
Not, it's like, you know, it feels like some other motherfucker signed me up for this shit, if that even is the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was probably similar to, like, all the false promises before I signed the contract to, like, you know, go to college or something. It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I signed a bad deal.
I don't remember any of this.
No, we'll be great.
Well, consciousness comes uninvited, and consciousness goes.
No, humans are really friendly.
Uninvited.
We'll be great.
Yeah, that's not so.
There's pizza.
It's a solid species, and they have pizza. So you should inhabit.
You get here, you're like, I'm sorry, what?
It's definitely worth incarnating on Earth.
It reminds me of that dude, like, well, but even, like, the non-dual teacher who got, like, really, like, into the aliens and shit.
Uh-huh.
And he just doesn't make any sense. This whole thing is like, oh, like, it's all, you're all one, like, but you have to, like, come here, like, on this mission to, like, I mean, I just...
Who's that? The Matt Kahn guy?
Matt Kahn, yeah.
That guy was...
Just goes...
Yeah. Well, he's just, you know, your basic narcissistic opportunist. Whatever, you know, floats out in the atmosphere, he'll run that tape and, you know, create a love fest, what would you call it, you know, institution that accepts donations.
You know, it's funny hearing you say that. It's really telling because he said, like, oh, and I got, like, a good response from, like, this new information, like, the alien side of it. And it's sort of like, oh, yeah, like, my marketing experts say, like, this is making money, so I'm going to focus on this now.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit.
Well, it's, you know, when they asked, I won't even tell the story, but, yeah, the basic narcissistic personality, good evening, you know, is capable of honing in on, you know, what brings the positive reaction, which, of course, if you're raising money in exchange for feeling a certain way, then that's what you want to do, is reinforce that reaction, because that fills the basket.
You're trying to make friends and influence people?
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
You know, the mega pastors with the, you know, 40,000 square foot homes and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're riding that Christ wave all the way to the bank. But okay.
I remember seeing that Matt Gunn guy on the sidebar who was interviewed by the Bat Gap. I was watching some of the J.P. Sears.
Uh-huh.
Did you watch that guy?
I can only take so much.
I watched some of it. Yeah, again, you can't watch the whole thing. It's too much. But the funniest thing was the comment. There's some guy saying, oh, my effing God, I'm watching this shit live, and some of these people don't know that this is satire. I'm like,
really?
Yeah, I was, like, shocked. I was like,
yeah.
I mean, right. Holy fucking hell.
Well.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's people that actually...
I didn't never even cross my mind that someone would not get it instantly.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
Yeah, how could he keep that up for 2 hours and 20 minutes?
I only watched like 15, 20 minutes. He doesn't ever smile or doesn't ever hint at, like,
right.
He's always so stone faced. Yeah. God, he is the perfect look for that shit.
He does.
He had a feather in his
New head. Age sensitive guy.
Yeah.
He looks so fucking funny. Oh, my God.
He never
breaks character.
Yeah.
It must have given stuff a lot of thought if you can keep it up for 2 hours.
Well, he has like hundreds of videos, so he literally I watched a couple of the short, like 5 minute clips that are really funny, but like I thought that too. I'm like, God, this guy's good, but I'm like, oh, alright, this is like his fucking life. He just is always, you know, thinking of whatever comedic reaction to give, to blow.
He must
whatever.
Have looked at a lot of stuff though.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. He knows like all the tradition, you know, bringing in like all sorts of weird shit, breatharing. He said he had a breatharing car and shit. Like, you know, he really is. I mean, he's into it. He's definitely smart, too, like, comedic. You know, I wouldn't say genius, but he's definitely up there.
Yeah, I know.
That's a great way to spend time. Yeah, this is already enough of a satire.
Well, the funny thing is, it like sort of wraps back around and like gave me pause to think a lot of time. So I'm like, oh, like sort of lets you know like when you're just being like an idiot. At least it did for me. I don't know if it did for anybody else.
Sure.
I didn't get it.
You didn't realize it was satire.
I didn't look at it yet.
I mean, kind of, but I just still was kind of just like, I don't.
Yeah.
It might have just been the dynamic between him and Rick Archer that just didn't do anything for me because I can't stand listening to Rick Archer for like 2 seconds. No.
Oh, well.
He has videos on like any topic. The one's like Tony Robinson. He did like a flat earth one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen him like a number of times.
Yeah. I was one on like veganism and being a meat eater. That one was so funny. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And you also noticed they took down the Teal Swan video from back at. They didn't say, like, specifically.
Really?
But he just said, sometimes we'll take it down at the request of the person, or if we don't want to promote whatever they're doing.
I see.
But you can kind of guess which one it is.
Teal Swan?
Yeah.
Happy to help you in any way. I don't really know how to describe it.
Yeah, she's, I mean, I watched, like, not a lot of back up, but, like, maybe 10 or so episodes of way, like, years and years ago, and I remember seeing her on there, and I just remember, God, some of these YouTube comments really stick out to me. The one good comment was, like, any psychotic woman would have you believe this about her. Like, this is, like, just a typical run-of-the-mill psychopath. But then apparently it had come out where she had been, like, counseling people, like, inadvertently to kill themselves and, like, was just like, really, like a real psychopath. And it took down her video, so I imagine that's the one.
Huh. Well, that could just be a compassion we're not quite ready for.
Yeah. Well,
that's what she had said, something like, oh, like, it's, you know, sometimes the troubles of life are too much, and this is a nice reset button you could push, and it's a lot easier. She said, like,
it's a lot easier
on the people around you, because you can be negative, and you pull them down, and it's like you're, like, doing a fit. I'm like, holy shit, this is the hardest sell for suicide I've ever seen. Uh-huh. I'm like,
here, drink this radioactive tea.
Yeah.
I mean, anything can make a little bit of sense, you know? Really? Really, out of context, it sounds horrible, but maybe in context, it was really...
Well, I can't even specifically...
Courageous advice.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I don't know, maybe it is a good reset button. I'm like, maybe this is me helping this person.
I'm well,
like,
yeah, I mean, if
at
she...
At the same time, you're like, this is really sick.
If she has a strong sense of... you know, disembodied identification and reincarnation, et cetera, then to her, it was really cogent advice.
Yeah.
It wasn't psychopathic.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess psychopathology depends on the culture in which it exists.
Well, yeah, sure. Right, of course. Well, you know, a few encounters, call them conscious encounters rather than, you know, fleeting, with, call it naked attention, you know, or the nature of being unadorned. If you get a few good hits, of radical evaporation, then, you know, a whole novel order of magnitude is revealed to you that you would have had no clue about otherwise. And that is a very, compelling inviting hard to refuse intelligence. Huh. So being a unwitting participant in metabolic urgency, we are, you know, driven largely by creature comfort, creature security, manifest destiny and egoic hegemony, all, right, having to do with the incredible compulsion of being a creature in time, the metabolic, right, metabolic agenda. And this, you know, metabolic agenda, metabolic hegemony, is the justification for everybody's mishigas. Which makes perfect, let's say makes perfect sense, you know, is justifiable. If, however, you have been somehow invited to glimpse unadornment, then you cannot refuse this other or companion dimension of, well, even to call it freedom is kind of silly, because to call it freedom drags it back into the, right, the metabolic imperative. Because by contrast, one is, you know, enjoying whatever freedom might be. I mean, and Backgap is a great example of so many where, you know, we are treated to a voyeuristic glimpse at the so-called freedom of another, which itself gets a little bit tiresome. Because even the way that the freedom of, let's say, so many either aspiring or realized beings is shared or espoused in that kind of vehicle, that, you know, interview vehicle, they're almost forced into, or are forced into, if they consent to it, of course, a biographical review, right? A spiritual seeking, searching, extraordinary experience compendium, and then attempt to sell, you know, just how happy or liberated or whatever they are, you know, invulnerable or full of magical and mystical data. And, you know, so you're like, oh, I want to be like that someday too, which kind of is a good setup for the satirist, you know, to do 2 hours worth of, really unending, right, limitless satire. Because the nonsense that we participate in or fall prey to is, you know, has no end, has no limit. We are capable of generating self-justifying cosmologies without a hesitation. And that magical capacity to present, feel, invest in, espouse, enroll others in one's, you know, cosmology, is samsara. But we don't know that it's samsara. We think that if we're good at being responding to biological imperatives and psycho-emotional, financial, socioeconomic reproductional, whatever thing you're into, you know, sales of drugs, use of drugs, recovery from drugs. I mean, everyone's making a dime somewhere, right? No matter what. So all of those ways of participating in the myth of the world are definitely engaging. Shame, blame, success, disappointment. I mean, it goes on and on. You know, it's 24/7. You're plugged into a unrelenting myth factory.
So unrelenting.
The TV, the YouTube, the politics, the corporations, the consuming of natural resources, eating and eliminating, going to interesting places to eat that you haven't been to before. I mean, the way that we indulge ourselves in this opulent nation is, kind of wonderful and, you could say a little disappointing, but it's not that much different in Europe, all right? I mean, right? I don't know. How much different is it in Iceland or Greenland or Canada? You know?
I think it's more like in the cities. It's crazy hectic no matter where you go. I mean,
take a stroll through Bombay.
Yeah.
You know, Kolkata, whatever they're calling their cities these days in India.
Bangalore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even in the, you know, the rural membranes in high density areas like India, it's, you know, there's bazaars for food and belongings and clothing and everything.
It'll be too much for me, I'm sure.
And the lorries, you know, and the cows and the trucks and the diesel.
Sometimes the railroad tracks going down the middle of the town, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Awnings have to be pulled back.
Yeah.
That one video of.
Oh, right. Yeah. Everyone folds up, the train comes through, and then they all.
Everybody comes. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a great metaphor for, you know, how we're functioning. Yeah.
I do think it's satire, like, you know, J.P. Sears. It's funny to see how people react. And, I mean, it usually cracks me up. But, yeah, there's limits to it. It's like, okay, I can only do so much of this. But, I mean, I'm curious in a very sarc way to look at the comments now that you mentioned it, because yeah, I mean, there's going to be people that don't understand. They're confused. And is this a put on? You know, they're wondering, you know. And people that are incensed, I'll bet you, there must be people that are totally incensed because it hits too close to home, you know. But to me, it's sort of a test. It's almost like, well, yeah, okay, you know. Maybe...
Well,
that was a little bit of me in there somewhere, you know, 10 years ago or whatever.
One's call it consciousness or, right, iterative, engaged way of collecting, you know, data is voyeuristic.
Yeah.
We're not only voyeuristic when it comes to, let's say, looking at comments from other people on, you know, an interview with a satirist, could be with a vampire, you know, or, you know, serial sexual predator or a psychopath that was abused satanically, right? And that same impulse for input is also happening right here. I mean, aren't I interested in, you know, whatever signals I can get from my biology and my sentiment and my emotion, my imagination, my memory, my desire, right? My opinions, humorous, or, I mean, aren't I just, 24/7 voyeuristically engaged with whatever is arising spontaneously in my, quote, own experience? So that's what you got. I mean, you have a fundamentally voyeuristic curiosity, sitting on top of an uninvited or unintended the metabolic, right, compulsion. You're fucked. that, and we call that human. Like, that's the best we can do. Engaged in voyeuristic distraction, 24/7, internally and externally, sitting on top of metabolic imperatives that we don't recall ever having signed up for. And through all that, we're looking for what? Spiritual succor, emotional succor, financial, what? We don't even know. We don't even know what's bothering us when we don't even know what it is that we'd hope to happen that would medicate or ameliorate what's bothering us. Most of the time, we're just sitting in a, you know, more or less shitstorm of imagination, being voyeuristically engaged in fabricated nonsense, you know, breathing because that's doing itself, and eating if the opportunity arises and if there's something to eat. And then finding a private place, quiet place to eliminate if we're lucky to do so. And repeat. So you could, you know, kind of appreciate why a teeming bacterial farm of 7-point-something billion, you know, thriving under the thin membrane of the atmosphere, just, you know, 5 to 6 feet above the ground, walking, you know, bipedally, is really frustrated. The whole bacterial proliferation is, you know, you could say psychically, spiritually frustrated, disarmed, suffering from a, you know, pandemic of unsatisfactoriness.
Pandemic of fake news.
It's a pandemic of fake news. It is. One's own consciousness is, you know, may as well be CNN.
Yeah. Well, or Breitbart. Who's controlling the narrative is...
Yeah, who's controlling the narrative? I know. Nobody knows.
Well, in the most intimate sense, you have to be controlling in some way.
Yes. And yet, you're...
not you. It's not like an object, so you can't really get hold of...
You are appearing... impersonally and spontaneously, according to, call it, you know, memes or morphically resonant fields of conditioning that you're not even in charge of or conscious of. So, God, I mean, why are you yourself? And if we really had what some would like you to believe is free will, well, Jesus, the first thing to do is stop being yourself. You know, where would you go first? Psst, shit. You'd erase this fucker in an instant. If you had free will, you could be someone or something else. Try that on for size. So why is it that we relate to life, our lives, each other's lives, the, you know, the media, whatever's going on, through the same body of, you know, conditioning, representation, preference, belief, superstition? We're not that flexible. We're all remarkably kind of, you know, rigid and repetitive. So to the extent that we are experiencing the narrative that looks and feels like me, right, we're not in, not surely not in control of it. It can be liberating or a little frustrating or both. You use the word liberating, but no one's fucking interested in liberation, or at least very few. Right? What we're interested in is working out the biologic imperative to some kind of apparent satisfaction, hoped for, dreamed for, anticipated or cultivated satisfaction. But we don't even know what that satisfaction is, because whatever it is, it's kind of short-lived. And yet we keep going back like the rat goes to the cocaine button over and over and over again, because we don't really know what the fuck else to do with ourselves being voyeuristically and biologically, you know, conditioned and exploded.
Just to go down a few notches here and put a fine point on that rat thing and the pushing the button. Rats evidently would rather have saccharin than cocaine. They'll push the button for saccharin more than they want cocaine.
Okay.
I just heard that today.
Wow. What is saccharin?
Oh, saccharin is it's like the original artificial sweetener. It was in tab.
Sugar over cocaine, huh?
Yeah, well, it's not even sugar, but...
Not sure, it's like a weird chemical of sorts or something.
Well, but I mean, it's treated as an artificial sweetener. I mean, you know, it's...
Well, how does that work in the rat's metabolic system? Is it doing something special for them, or...
I don't know.
To be continued.
You can get me some saccharin, I think.
Yeah, really. Line me up. Get a saccharin lick. Put it in the living room.
Yeah, part of this talk was about how people are addicted to diet sodas and stuff like that.
Isn't saccharin like from rat poisoning or something?
No. I'm trying to remember what that's
called. Chaney has something to do with it.
It's
Chaney and Rumsfeld.
Oh, it's from tar sands.
Something to do
it's
with
not
it.
Good.
It's from tar sands. And the guy was eating.
It's natural, man. It should be good.
It should be. This guy, this chemist, these chemists, this has happened several times. Chemist was working with tar sands, and then he was having like a piece of bread. And it's like, man,
that's
bread is
good
sweet.
Bread, yeah.
It's like, wow, what's the deal? This bread shouldn't be this sweet. And then he licked his fingers and it was like,
who's working on tar sands and other, like.
And then licking their fingers.
Yeah, what the
geniuses, obviously.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't jump. Yes.
Next stop is working at the Wawa. You know, for the time, which could be quite a, you know, multi-decade long sentence, that we are, you know, hell-bent on either ameliorating our discontent or outsmarting our discontent. We remain under the influence of this, you know, voyeuristic shitbox of metabolic imperative that suffers chronic malnourishment and dissatisfaction. But we're tenacious, so we will do it for a long time. You know, the drugs, the employment, the relationships.
Every day we wake up, we forget about
the entertainments and the distractions. We have all figured out, right? We have all habituated and figured out to the best of our so-called ability how to negotiate with consciousness on what we think is our terms. When what's really happening, if I can be so bold, is, you know, useless compensatory mechanisms that, in John Lennon's words, whatever gets you through the night, it's all right. It's all right. And that's what we're seeing, you know, in ourselves, if we're emboldened enough to do that. And that's what we see, of course, you know, throughout the greater spread of the bacterial proliferation.
Yeah, it's all the second law of thermodynamics.
Okay.
Just trying to even things out in the environment around me.
Yeah. Yeah. So the liberation equation is also mostly shared as an entertainment vehicle, as a you know, community vehicle, right? As a practice vehicle, as a vehicle for study, contemplation, consideration, which is nice because then it becomes, hopefully, you know, somewhat of an enlivening hobby, right? That's our relationship with it. If we begin some kind of relationship with a contemplative or yogic vehicle, it's a vehicle that occurs as a hobby. Again, so it also fulfills the need for a compensatory response to a more solemn existential unsatisfactoriness that we haven't put our finger on yet. So if the Buddha said, if, you know, Ramakrishna said, if Nirsagadatta said, if J.P. Sear said, I'll try it. I'll try it. I'll do it. I'll sign up. I'll click the clacks and walk the walk and zen the zen and, you know, vipassana the vipassana, listen to Joseph Goldstein. I'll do my JYNs. Maybe I'll go to an ancient or foreign country and imbibe with their shamans. I'll do it. I'll spin like the Sufis. And these are, all these adventures, of course, are, they're enlivening. I mean, they make a life, you know, you could say interesting to live. It's entrepreneurial success or celebrity success in the arts or in sports or in media or, you know, starting a retreat center and somewhere near Glacier National Park and having little huts for people to meditate in, and you're the cook and the massage therapist and you do the accounting and, right, you order the supplies and you can have a little fun. You can be a live foods counselor. You can hang with Gabriel Cousins and drink a lot of juice, wear a yarmulke, pretend to be a rabbi. Or better yet, a Kabbalistic rabbi.
Cannibalistic rabbi?
Well, those are the best. So the, you know, the opportunity for entertainment, distraction, compensation, belonging, belief, superstition, practice, repetition, discovering, you know, ancient texts, whether those are Ayurvedic or ancient alien. There's more to do than you can fit, right, into your allotted life.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to be bored, too.
And tons of time to be bored. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like boredom is just like not being able to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
Giving up and...
Well, you... I think maybe an organic process occurs where the incessant appetite for voyeuristic entertainment, whether focused inwardly or outwardly, starts to reveal itself as just not being enough. It's just not enough. Yeah. I can't get the same thrill.
Yeah, the same, when it's the same flavor all the time, especially.
Yeah, that's right. I can't get the same thrill from all that Dzogchen anymore. I used to think it was, you know, the shit. Now it's shit. Right. So this becomes, counterintuitive, counterproductive, in a manner of speaking, to turn one's back on the unrelenting and incessant habits of voyeuristic entertainment and compensatory behaviors. We fortunately grow really tired of ourselves. Ouch. And that's a little scary. It's a little disconcerting because as long as we're, in a sense, overwhelmed by more to do than we can possibly do or more to investigate than we can possibly investigate, we feel a certain kind of abundance. It may be frustrating, but at least, you know, it has kind of an abundant flavor. But if the thrill dissipates of its own accord, then, yeah, it's unnerving. Well, there's, yes.
I was just going to mention about the phenomenon that I get a sense of, that there's sort of a meanness, a feeling of meanness when I'm alone, but there's a different feeling of meanness, if you want to call that, or maybe it's a different entity altogether, when I'm with any number of individuals. So I'm going to be a certain way. I mean, I'm going to sense this different aspect of myself when I'm with, you know, one, two, three, or whoever.
Yeah.
I'll be very, very different, and it's very, very palpable, you know? I'm not the same.
No.
I mean, and I imagine in my great imagination that a really, you know, together person would be the same no matter what's going on.
I don't know if it's possible.
I don't know. But I know that I am not like that. I'm a different person depending on
who I'm hanging with. We're adaptive.
Like a perfect allegory for an atom. Like, it's, you know, you're there and it's sort of in one area, but you don't really know what's going to come out.
Yeah.
So just listen to, like, them talk about fighters and how, you know, you can come out and have, like, the best performance of their life and then another night step out and suck. And it's like, that's the same sort of person, you know, but who knows what you're really going to get in any given moment.
I thought you meant Adam, like Adam and Eve, like the perfect.
I wasn't sure.
Adam is fresh each.
Yeah, what was that?
Like an atom, like quantum mechanics, you know, it's like, it's sort of there, but.
I mean, also kind of.
It's sort of there, but it's not really there.
Yeah.
An atom hat.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Adam and Eve, though, I heard a good one for that. It was, this guy was talking about the agriculture revolution and how, essentially, basically, until the scientific revolution, it was like a downgrade for humans and their well-being. Everything after the agricultural revolution, because beforehand you wandered around as a hunter-gatherer, and if the mushrooms weren't growing, you ate, you know, whatever fruit, and then the, you know, whatever game wasn't here, you know, you ate the different animals. So like you got a variety of different foods in your diet, and therefore were more healthy.
Right.
And you're doing like, you know, different, you know, types of work, not just like breaking your back with a plow or this or that, or like making a stone pyramid for some asshole. You know, you're running around like hunting, you know, doing other fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, so he had said that essentially like that was it. Like you were living in harmony with nature and then you fell out of the Garden of Eden, which was, you know, the first contact with farming. And then you have to, you know, work by the sweat of your brow or whatever. And then, you know, and
yeah,
you have all this other stuff come out, and it's basically all hell for the next however many thousand, 10,000 years or so until you come to where we are now. And I guess you could say that in a lot of ways it still is, as you look at like suicide rates and stuff like that. But
that's the archaic revival, I think. Isn't that, that's the Terence McKenna thing, where he was talking about, he named it with the archaic, I think, revival, you know, where there's this desire to go back to those days before. Yeah, they think that, you know, you think of farming as, you know, an increase, you know, and
it was a definite decrease, like right. In almost any measure you want to look at it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that was, I mean, probably a pretty good estimation of a Garden of Eden story, if there was one.
Sure.
Well, our own ingenuity is our downfall.
Yeah.
Yeah, the capacity to tame the soil.
Overcomplicate everything.
became an incarceration.
Yeah, yeah.
That sowed the foundation for civilization, which is now where it's at.
And that got rid of all the mushrooms too.
Yeah, well,
according to Terrence McKenna, yeah. It actually crowded out the mushrooms.
We would have been better off.
You would have thought that there were
smaller population centers, more hunting, gathering, more mushrooms. Yeah, definitely.
He credits mushrooms with the whole.
Yeah, he really takes it pretty far.
Yeah, he takes it pretty far. Right. Yep.
I mean, it would about fit the timeline as far as a 6,000-year-old Earth.
Uh-huh.
Right when you come out of or hit the agricultural revolution.
Well, what's the reference to the 6,000 years out of Christian time?
Yeah, that's like what the young Earth Christians, they take the entire family tree of the Bible back and they estimate the Earth is like, I don't know, 6,600 years old or something like that. I think the agricultural revolution was about then.
Yeah.
Close to it. And I heard another explanation from a psychologist, and he said that Satan, you know, God's greatest angel, would be like the highest function of the human brain. And when that rose up to challenge God and said that, like, no, I know everything, I know the perfect truth, that was like Satan's fall. And at that point, you are in hell. And it would have been Satan's machinations which got us into, you know, the whole agriculture revolution and all the other mess that followed after that. I thought that's a pretty good explanation for the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the context of coming up with lovely metaphors for why and how and when and what's at fault, come up with.
And it can be woven either way. It can be like it's this all, great advance or this it's, horrible decline.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of declines, too, I had just read there was, you know, tablets in Iran, maybe, or Pakistan, which the British discovered, you know, maybe 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, people living next to these, like, 25-meter-high, long stone inscriptions in the face of this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, an ancient language that they didn't know how to speak. It was, like, the early Persian Empire, you know, inscribed by King Darius. And, like, it has this crazy big empire that falls. And then, like, things sort of go to the wayside. And, like, people, like, forget, like, all the shit that they wrote down. Can't even read their own language. People always just think, like, oh, progress, progress. But, like, I mean, really, things went, in terms of progress, backwards, like, many times for a long period of time.
That's like the U.S. of A, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Maybe we're right on the edge of a
precipice.
Yeah.
It's probably just what we need.
Yeah, our engaged voyeurism loves a good story, and of course it loves itself because it's a good story. And it extroverts by stalking and finding objects of sensation or objects of imagination, objects of history, objects of causality, objects of prognostication, including who's to blame, and therefore where should we build the wall and who should sign up for the registry. Yeah. Self-luminosity, well, it's more like, you know, a black hole metaphor that is collapses in on itself and is no longer busying itself with, you know, externalization. It becomes a singularity. So the inflation of, you know, an expanding so-called universe or spiral galaxy peppered with gaseous excitation and star formation. Is the, you know, the extroverted entertainment. And a companion to that, not antithetical to it, but a companion, is the nourishing introversion of self-luminosity. Which is, you know, unperturbed. And doesn't rely on projection or imagination to entertain or to vet itself. There's no resolution of anything or, you know, even clever insight to be had about anything. Because the, you know, what we'll call the iterative and regurgitative mind is, it's not running the show. It's not running the narrative. It's not creature dependent. It's not a salve for the imagination of your life, which is commonly how we approach so many secular and spiritual interventions, is, you know, in hopes of a certain salve to mitigate or heal or soothe or smooth, you know, all the discontent that we find, the apprehensive discontent that we find as the creature suffering from incessant voyeuristic compensation. it's difficult for us to tolerate or enjoy ourselves, just as we are, just as this is. So this existential restlessness drives us again. No matter what we find, you know, we want more of it or less of it. We always have to do something about everything. And we're happy to. You know, if I need a piece of technology, I can research it and price it and find the best one, wait till it's on sale, get a coupon, and boy, it'll be here on Wednesday in the mail. I'm like, I'm spasming.
Camera collection with that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep. God bless you, Jeff Bezos. So this is, this is nothing to sell, thankfully. It's not an amelioration. It doesn't fit into the preferential ways that you want to live your life. There's no strategy. It doesn't engage you as the clever wielder of a spiritual technology. There is a companion intelligence. That reveals itself and solicits your attention. As the ferocity of compensatory voyeurism relaxes. And this companion intelligence can't be reduced to human liturgical interpretation. we're good at consuming, you know, finding a need, manufacturing a need, being conditioned to have a need that we didn't realize we had, then running off somewhere to go get the remedy and bring it home like a squirrel might stuff it in its jowls and dump it off under a shingle somewhere. So this consumerist proclivity, well, it also, you know, you could say taints or influences the, right, the aspiration for different orders of intelligence. And that's, you know, one of the, you could say, very common ways that even the most sincere aspirant for more refined intelligence gets tripped up. Because the voyeurism, the entertainment, and the metaphoric agenda is so strong. The consumerist agenda is so strong that we swear, we insist that there's something to find that's going to feel better. And we imagine that that's something to find is going to appear to us and or please us within the fabric of what we call my experiential reality field. And there's no doubt that cool shit happens. You know, weird shit and cool shit and novel and, you know, paradoxical and incapacitative shit goes down. So there's no, you know, lack of that. If that's what's driving one's, you know, contemplative arc, you can find just gobs and gobs of, you know, curious, discontinuous, weird stuff. But that's not what you're after. Because you see that everything that's found spontaneously takes on an animus of its own, you know, nature, its own meme, its own vibratory presentation. And you could say the intensity, the saturation with which consciousness imbues objects found and then participates in this, you know, somewhat blissful, if not disconcerting, animus, that's samsaric. Because it's inexhaustible, you know, it can feel like it's worth pursuing or cultivating because novelty is, you know, I'm all about that.
Well, it would seem as though that's the only game in town. Of course, that's not true. But so often...
It does seem.
That's sort of the way consciousness rolls. You know?
Yes. Consciousness rolls that way. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you think that towards your older years, your waning years, and I think that it's...
After you're 45.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, but yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the old folks, you know, go into a more mellow self-reflective phase or what have you. But, I mean, there are people, and I know people that, are just, they'd like gotta travel as much as they can because they know they're gonna be infirmed and die. And they wanna get all that good stuff in.
Why not? One cruise after another.
Yeah.
Beautiful weather, burgers by the pool.
It seems a little frantic. I mean, I play solitaire. They go on,
yeah,
you know.
Go on a cruise.
Go on a cruise or whatever.
Yeah. Get out from behind that screen and go on a cruise.
as if there's something to be found there, you know, something to be learned. I'm always amazed that they, you know, there's always a few really older folks that are going to get their degree or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's always this like, yeah, atta boy or atta girl. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I mean, if that's what you want to do, if that's, you know, I mean, is it the joy of learning or is it, you know, you want to do something with it? I mean, I don't know.
You want to get out of the house because your husband watches too much TV.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Or it could be the joy of learning.
Yeah, just relief of boredom.
Yes. It's a whole new territory when the insatiable pursuit of experience and animus changes course. And, you know, you're invited to consider the presence and texture of this companion intelligence. And whether it, to the extent that it's beckoning you and soliciting you, that you are, you know, hearing it, that you're responding, that you make, you could say, time or space for feeling what this feels like when it's unadorned. You're not being pushed around by something to find, something to get, something to understand, something to heal, something to write home about. Would you trade everything that's fascinating for, you know, a solemn glimpse of emptiness? Mm. Would you trade?
Maybe that's what holds us back. Because we know that deep down that the one negates the other.
Yeah.
The fear of it all. The death fear.
The fear of it all. Yeah. It's hard to know, you know, if there's anything at all that is capable of obscuring or obfuscating a companion intelligence.
They seem to just be this strange, I mean, it's bizarre to feel yourself this weird anger and then at the same time be like, I'm still tripping out. There's still this sweetness and this bizarre, you know, trippy nature to things. And I'm seeing, you know, like simultaneously, yes. You're like,
wow. Yeah. Yeah,
so
it's not.
Is it simultaneous or are you bouncing back and forth?
No, it's.
Well,
nothing
has any actual duration, so you can't actually find, except through, you know, metaphoric imagination, what condition you're in. And so it could certainly be capable of perceiving, you know, seething whatever, accompanied by an innocent fascination. A non-afflicting, innocent fascination while there's, you know, a seething going on. Which is kind of fun. I mean, you know, that that experiential paradox certainly could be useful if you're prone to artistic expression.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's nothing wrong with that. You know?
Well,
it's
not even, I mean, the other layer I want to play with is,
yeah, you can't get a hold of it.
You cannot characterize.
I know.
You cannot characterize yourself in any way at all, right? Except through.
It's like if you look in the mirror and you. I was doing this weird thing the other day, but if you look in the mirror and you look away from your eyes, you can still get a kind of outline of what you look like.
Yeah.
But if you focus your attention away from your eyes, you can't see your eyes.
Right.
And then if you focus back, you have to focus to your eyes to see your eyes.
Yes.
It's a weird.
Yeah, if you look at your nose, you're not seeing your eyes anymore.
No, yeah, it's a weird. And that's the same. It's like, so in trying to evaluate anything, you're trying to poke your attention at different weird. And you're always, it's really kind of narrow, single.
Yeah. Attention doesn't really know what it's finding.
You know, that's weird because, you know, we, in our bathroom, we have the kind of candidate where the one mirror comes out and the other one will come out.
So you can see look the in one mirrors. Mirror
and you get your profile and stuff like that. It's so very weird. Because it doesn't quite feel like you anymore. You know, it feels different. And it's almost like there's this innate feeling of reflection, you know, like you recognize the reflection. And, you know, now it's like the thing for the last 5 years or so where people are selling some product or doing some stupid thing. And all of a sudden, a secondary camera angle opens up and they're still talking to the original. Now, that was a no-no forever until recently. And now it's like you'll see the person talking as if he's talking off camera. And it just feels so weird. But evidently now it's like sort of cool to do. You ever notice that? Did they do that?
No.
You know, so they're talking straight to
the camera. I'm not very aware of the.
Well, they're talking straight to the camera. And then this other camera comes in. And they're still talking to that camera. They don't turn like that. Right. A newscaster would always turn towards the camera.
Yeah, side profile.
But it's just this weird third party kind of feel to it, even when it's of yourself.
You know? Oh, yeah.
And yeah, the eyes, the gateway to the soul.
Well, it's more, I was trying to more just point out the focus of attention seems to be, it's like not capable of evaluating anything for, you know, it's has to be kind of like single frames almost, you know, it can't.
If I dare, you know, actual perception is maddening. Such is the nature of the dynamism of perceiving itself. Nothing at all stays static or still or can be meticulously investigated because the consciousness is a darting, you know, dancing fool. The call it the mechanical plenums through which we perceive are also dancing and darting fools. And the so-called objects that we imagine are being held in our attention or through the five senses are also absolutely unstable. If you get very close, like looking at yourself in a mirror, you're kind of confronted with the instability and the darting nature of attention.
Or gazing at another person, you know, the whole
yes.
gazing thing.
Yeah. And you could say, you know, mindfulness practice or stillness practice will also reveal that in terms of what's appearing in mind and where the imagination is going. So the streaming nature of imagination and association and, of course, sensation. And how, you could say, counterintuitive that is to the yogic admonitions to hold something still.
Right.
Right?
But of course, trying to hold something still is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, just let it happen, but or let whatever happen.
Yeah.
Trying to make that happen is kind of crazy. It's like, no instruction is going to really work, it would seem.
No, this, I mean, you're going to tame this? You're going to outsmart this or tame this?
But there it is, too. You know, so, certainly, you know, this ultra, I want to say, I don't mean awake. I mean, like, a waking consciousness, you know, busy, busy, busy,
yeah.
darting. I mean.
Yeah.
And the more that happens, the less you're able to let it go. I mean, I know for me that's really been true this whole election season.
when things are, you know, attracting us through either being thrilling or imposing, right? Terrifying. Then, yeah, we can become compulsive on a dime. Yeah. And then end up in a chemical loop, right? The chemistry of either being thrilled and in anticipation, exactly. Addictive or otherwise, or the chemical loop of being scared out of our minds for what's yet to come. Yeah.
And hopeful and despairing, you know, all those things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, if you wanted to do something progressive and intelligent as concerns running for public office, you shouldn't be able to run for public office unless you've done LSD.
Yeah.
You know, more than once. Yeah, I mean, if you haven't done LSD or mushrooms or ayahuasca or all three, you know, more than once, you shouldn't run for public office. You shouldn't be permitted.
It should be a test.
Yeah, that's right. Because only, the flowering of a profound Gaic affection makes a human being, I would say, worthy of fulfilling the privilege of public office. If you haven't woken up to sacred Gaic affection, well, you're worse than a muggle.
We've sunk so low with Trump that I'm thinking we should give him the Turing test, really, just to see if he is human.
Yeah.
Give him the AI test, seriously. Are you human?
Good point.
Is there any humanity in there?
He's a sick boy.
Well, you see, the whole spiritual agenda can get fulfilled and boring at the same time. The fulfillingness is the slow or rapid onset of disinterest in voyeuristic entertainment. Which some would say is a withdrawing from the world. But that's not quite correct. Withdrawing from the world is, as we can see, kind of impossible to do. Even if you sequester yourself, it's still difficult to do. Discovering a companion intelligence that doesn't foment the world in the first place, that's possible.
Seems more fun.
Could be more fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Band-aid, fun, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, a good amount of harumph is spent, entertainingly so, right, to dismantle the belief systems and fundamental superstitions that we don't even know we are harboring. That justifies time and space and birth and singularity and inflation and, you know, everything that we can find right and wrong with ourselves and everybody else. I mean, that's a huge body of myth that so-called persons are, you know, enjoying or suffering from. So you can hammer on that shit, you know, a while. Well, then there's the dawning of this companion intelligence. Which, thankfully, has nothing at all to do with pursuits employed sincerely up to this point. It's not the fruition of pursuit. It's not the fruition of practice, though practice and pursuit certainly, you know, can fill some of the void. Moments of, you know, discontinuity or release from self, they, you know, thankfully come and go. We give them a certain amount of attention or not. They come, you know, unbidden, frequently enough and deeply enough that they catch our attention. What the fuck was that? The intrepid seeker for this holy grail continues the arc of their life and their curiosity, their study and their practice, places they go and people they talk to and experiences that they have that well, you could say contribute, right, to contribute to an atmosphere of subtle discovery. You're not ranting about how exciting your encounter with Byron Katie was and how she unraveled decades worth of, you know, stuffy codependence. Because there's a lot more where that came from. Not placing any demands on experience, not needing it to be a certain way. Not, you know, jumping into that squirrel mind or hamster mind that gathers, right, crumbs and morsels and all kinds of other things in hopes of storing them away for a winter day. As familiarity with absentia occurs or deepens, the insatiability of perceiving and conceiving, well, you release it or it releases you. And in that case, it doesn't matter whether it's the chicken or the egg. But how the fuck can you sell release from perceiving and conceiving? Because that's what we're all about. I want more knowledge and more wisdom and more curious explanations for the way things appear to be. And therefore, who created Easter Island and the pyramids and what was their message to us? And why do we have so much wonderful archaeological evidence of the rise and fall of profound cultures and civilizations, and yet we are happy to blatantly deny, you know, the implications of these things, including, you know, the curious evidence that some TED talkers will find concerning, you know, Atlantis. And an impact crater in the Gulf of Mexico and rising sea levels and all of these curious, right, kind of prehistory evidence that kind of blows your mind about the presence of sentient life on Earth and how far back it might actually reach. No matter what the so-called truth is, I mean, you know, even if they released all of the Area 51 archives and what that implies, right? The cattle mutilations and the human experiments and, you know, anti-gravity vehicles and interdimensional travel and curious metallurgy, right? It's like, I'm so happy. You still find, you know, looking at your own face in the mirror and you're like, consciousness is too unstable. It's just too unstable to get a, you know, to get a lock on it, to get a lock on yourself. It's too unstable. And so all of this, you know, voyeuristic and samsara compensation is a kind of, well, it's an involuntary denial of the actual instability of experiencing and consciousness and the perturbations of so-called perceivable reality and the fact that we have no idea how to cope with any of it. So maybe the farming was a way of going, I can't stand rolling around in the forest eating mushrooms, hoping to find grapes, you know, or some honey. I think I'd be much better off just planting some fucking corn and, you know,
only eat corn. That's
just eat corn and build silos and we'll be fine. I mean, that same kind of taming, right, of the food chain, let's say, right? Taming of the food chain is what we do inwardly through the superstructure of a cogent persona. So we've farmed our consciousness in the same way that we've, you know, farmed the geography for the sake of some kind of, you know, security enterprise.
Coherence and stability.
Yes.
So if you encounter people and you're all saying the same stuff, then it seems like this is coherent. This makes a lot of sense.
That's right.
Stick with the script. If you start going out of the script, people are like, no.
Yeah, the companion intelligence, which reveals the instability of perceiving and conceiving and or the presumption of a secular reality field, is thrilling when you, can we say, work up to it, right? If you're doused in that kind of discontinuity without preparation, well, you know, you can go, and many have gone mad. That's cool. Nothing like a little collateral damage.
This likes collateral damage.
It sure loves.
Doesn't seem to mind it.
It doesn't mind collateral damage. Species
care at all.
Species come and go. Planet come and go. Solar system come and go.
You know,
gaseous nebula come and go. Fucking dark matter eats everything. Why not? Or fourth dimensional stars. Yeah.
If only they would have eaten better.
I know. Yeah.
Could have been a better third dimensional ship.
This is bad gas.
That's right. This is a bad gas universe.
It's kind of rotten eggy.
Yeah. It's just like, you can smell the sulfur everywhere in this dimension.
Yeah, as far as things being coherent, when I like really stop to pay attention to what is so familiar about myself, it's like there's really nothing there except like the feeling of familiarity. It's just like it's like the feeling of like, what the fuck?
That goes too when you look in the mirror and you're like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, you're right. You know, there's not really any evidence for why you're familiar. It's just the familiarity itself. And you can't figure out what that is. It's great. Why am I so familiar to myself? I will not figure that out.
That's how everything is. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was having that same experience with chemtrails the other day. I'm like, I don't have any evidence, but you just kind of, you know, you're like, just doesn't seem familiar. Like, you know, there's a certain, it's weird. You're like, familiar.
It's like Bill Maher says, I don't know for a fact, but I know, and then whatever, chemtrails.
I haven't looked at it yet, but there's a whole website dedicated to disproving chemtrails.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of them. That's the first thing when you Google search there, come up with tons of websites that say these are all fake.
There was that government guy that said,
geoengineering.
Yeah, I mean, he was like straight up, and he was like a legitimate, you know, position.
Yeah, there's plenty of them.
That was like,
Well, then there's like that guy, you know, the whatever, retired army colonel who claims that he's like a fucking time traveler, space traveler, and he was up there. And it's like, okay, really, I can trust no one anymore.
Wait, the guy that, you mean the Brit? The Brit
guy? I'm gullible. I got it.
I'm into it.
I don't know. I can't even, I thought James Sears, I thought he was serious. I wasn't paying a lot of attention. And I didn't see his before stuff. But that's how gullible I am. I mean, I'm fucked.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not normally something you'd want to let out of the bag.
You're a fourth dimensional
girlfriend.
Yeah,
nice.
His wife is upset because he had sex with this fourth dimensional being.
Jesus Christ, man! Huh. Can't even let a man fantasize in peace.
I think he's British. Yeah, pretty sure. And he's an official, but low level. He's on.
Official.
County official of some sort.
Yeah. He goes to all of the crop circles.
Is there an envelope under here?
No.
I see an envelope.
can't seem to, just sitting there on the kitchen table and I just can't figure out.
You're going to make him pin both.
Here's a container for contributions.
Almost burned us down.
We want to replace distraction with distraction.
Fire with fire.
In hopes of, you know, cultivating or finding something which is not distracting.
So the one thing that satisfies that, then we can't name it.
Good cup of Ovaltine.
Ovaltine.
See, this is what makes it kind of challenging, I would say, in a constructive way. For, you know, call it a, you know, group of friends that gets together to consider the vagaries of being. If you're not enrolling people in cosmology and practice and the fine tuning or steerage of that practice, if you're not enrolling yourself or anyone else in some kind of cosmology which keeps everyone on the hook for more distraction and more novelty and more, you know, progress, you're like, whoa. Yeah. Whoa, right? So you're, well, let's see, what would be an interesting thing to mention next? I don't know. Yeah. Well, that's when this shit starts to dead end, but not necessarily in a, you know, a frustrating way. Fruition means what exactly? If you're just empty of cosmology and empty of adornment, and you're sure as fuck not practicing anything anymore to figure out how you can, you know, squeeze more out of it. Well, it's just that weird familiarity, which doesn't have an object. And that's that. That's self-luminosity. This peculiar familiarity, which is it weans itself from objects and subject. You know, opens to a companion reality or a companion consciousness, which is not... not corporeal.
If you if you're chill, if you're totally chill, and you look in the mirror, is it a different experience, or do you still go through that like, whoa? I don't know. You know what I mean?
You have to ask J.P. Sears.
Correct. There is this weird thing when you're looking at something that's so intimate and you're looking at it and you're looking, so it's the old subject-object thing. That's like the interface, you know, in a way.
the interface, you know, you could say that's the engine that suggests the world.